In today's episode, I will be telling you 5 creepy stories, including a creepy hide-and-seek encounter with something hiding in the dark, a toddler's chilling visit from a grandfather she never met, a dead neighbor's TV that won't stay off, a creepy Pacheco Pass sighting from an Amazon driver, and a Tinder date that could have turned into a true crime case. After listening, I would love if you could comment which scary story creeped you out the most, if you are listening on Spotify, or if you are listening on Apple. Rate and review my podcast, and comment which scary story creeped you out the most. Story number 1. A scary hide-and-seek story posted by an anonymous user on Reddit. At the time, Drayshawn was around 10 years old, still at an age where games like hide-and-seek could turn an ordinary afternoon into something exciting. That'd been a typical visit, family friends over, adults talking somewhere else in the house while the kids found their own way to pass the time. There were 3 of them, Drayshawn, a girl from school, and her younger brother. And eventually boredom led to a game they knew they all loved. A good old game of hide and seek. And after a few rounds, the game started to feel too easy. The house didn't offer many hiding places, but still, Drayshawn kept hiding in the same damn closet. And for some reason, the 2 others could never find him. They never looked in this closet. And getting bored of the game, Drayshawn suggested something more challenging and more fun. It would turn off all the lights and close all the blinds, and the room suddenly were swallowed by the darkness. So to start off this hard version of the game, Drayshawn decided to be it. He started searching and moving carefully through the darkness. He checked the obvious places first. Behind doors, under tables, and along the hallway. Then he made his way into his own bedroom. The darkness inside felt heavier somehow, like it settled differently there. His attention shifted to the closet. It was built into the wall with 2 swinging doors, built with hung-up clothes and clutter on the floor. Not an ideal hiding spot, but not impossible either, especially in a pitch black house where squeezing into tight spaces was part of the fun. Drayshawn stepped closer and slowly opened the door. And there was no sound, no movement, and still, he reached his hand inside. And at first, his fingers brushed against the fabric, shirts hanging, soft and familiar. But then he reached deeper, feeling past the clothes into the darker space towards the back. And that's when he felt it. As he reached his hand into the closet and felt around, he ended up touching what he felt was someone's open palm, as if the back of their hand was pressed against the back of the closet. He touched the hand and immediately felt it flinch and pull away. And as it pulled away, Drayshawn felt their fingers as well. Startled, but thinking that it was just part of the game, Drayshawn pulled his hand back and said, half laughing, "Okay, I felt you. Get out." But nothing happened. He waited. But still, nothing would come out. "Come on," he said, again into the darkness. "I felt you. You lost. Come on, get out." But there was still silence. No shifting, no footsteps, no one stepping out of the closet. And at that time, a strange unease crept in. And then from behind him, he had heard movement. His friend and her younger brother had entered the room. "What's wrong?" they asked. The sounds of their voices hit Drayshawn like a jolt. If they were both there, then who or What had he just touched? He quickly turned on the light. The room flooded with brightness, chasing away the shadows. He pulled open the closet doors fully and looked inside. And there was clothes, shoes, random clutter, but no one there. No space disturbed. No sign that anyone had been hiding inside at all. The three of them stood there, staring, the reality setting in piece by piece. Drayshawn tried to explain what he felt, the hand, the way it moved, and how it reacted to him. They all felt it then, that creepy, sinking fear that something had happened that none of them can explain. They ended the game immediately. They went to find their parents, explaining everything in rushed, uneasy voices. The grown folks had checked the closet, the room, the house, but found nothing out of place. No intruder, no explanation. And eventually, it was brushed off. And over time, Drayshawn tried to do the same. He told himself that it had just been his imagination, a trick of the mind in the dark, something explainable, even if he couldn't quite explain it. But one detail never faded. The feeling, the unmistakable sensation of skin against his fingers, the way the hand had reacted, alive, aware, pulling back from his touch. And even years later, Drayshawn could recall it perfectly. And no matter how much he tried to rationalize it, one thought never left him. That something had been in that closet with him, and that it had pulled away. Story number 2. What we believe was our daughter's paranormal moment as a toddler, posted by an anonymous user on Reddit. For a stretch of time when Prashel was just over a year old until a little past her second birthday, nights in her childhood home carried a strange, recurring pattern. It would begin with laughter, not the soft, sleepy kind, but bright, animated giggling, sometimes escalating into full, uncontrollable cackling and exciting squeals. The kind of laughter that sounded like she was reacting to someone or playing with someone, only no one was there. And each time it happened, one of her parents would wake up and go to her room, expecting to find her restless or dreaming. But instead, they would find Prashel standing or sitting in her crib, turned toward one of its sides, looking upward, watching something, engaged with something. And she never seemed afraid. It was always quite the opposite. She looked delighted. At the time, they tried not to read too much into it. Babies laughed, they imagined things. But still, the consistency of it, the way she seemed to focus on something unseen, lingered quietly in the back of their minds. Then it came the moment that changed how they remembered those nights. One afternoon, her father was carrying Prashel through the house, stopping at framed photographs hanging on the walls. It was a simple game. Point at familiar faces and ask, "Who's that?" Prashel answered in her toddler way, using her small developing vocabulary to identify people that she knew. Her mom, her father, grandparents, auntie, uncles, each one met with recognition or her best attempt at repeating their names. And eventually they came across a collage, a collection of older photographs filled with moments and people from years past. Some were family members, some were friends, few of them were no longer alive. When he pointed to someone that Brichelle didn't recognize, she would quickly look at him and raise her hand slightly and say, "I don't know." He would then say the name out loud and she would try her best to repeat it. It was lighthearted until he pointed to one particular photo. It was a picture of him and his father, Rochelle's grandfather, who had passed away more than a decade before she was even born. He pointed to himself first. "Dada," Rochelle said confidently. And then he pointed to his father, and the reaction was immediate. Rochelle's entire expression changed. Her face lit up with pure excitement. She began bouncing in his arms, bending her knees and pushing upward, her laughter spilling out uncontrollably. Her arm shot up towards the ceiling as she looked above them, not at the photo.
"Papa!" she shouted,
again and again.
"Papa! Papa! 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 Papa!"
She laughed as if she were greeting someone she knew, someone she recognized. The room went still. Her father felt a chill run through him, sharp and undeniable. And across from him, Phyllis watched with wide eyes, trying to process what they were seeing. There were things that didn't add up. Rochelle had never been shown that photo before. It wasn't displayed anywhere else in the house that she would have seen regularly. In fact, there were very few pictures of her grandfather around the house at all. And more than that, she had never said the word "Papa," not once. But there was one other detail. Rochelle's uncle, who lived across the country, someone that she had only met one time before, who had a daughter who had spent much of her early life with the grandfather before he passed away, she would call the grandfather Papa. It had been his name in the family, the one that he loved the most. Standing there, holding their laughing child, the realization had settled in slowly, emotionally, and without explanation. Neither parent said it out loud at that moment, but they both knew it. They felt it. And later, when they thought back to those nights, the laughter, the giggling, the way Rochelle would stand in her crib and look up, engaged with something they couldn't see, it began to feel different. Less like imagination, and more like real company. The idea stayed with them, not as something that they could prove, but something they quietly believed. That maybe, in those early years, Rochelle hadn't been alone after all. You guys know I love telling scary stories, but did you know I also like to cook? Now when I cook, I'm always looking for high quality meats, and given that I do a lot of online ordering, selecting any sort of meat is always like a gamble. Am I going to get something fresh, or will it be the old meat that's almost off the shelf? Because of that, I'm anxious to order any sort of meat online, and I often have to visit the store in person to pick the quality meat that I want. But what if I told you there's a different solution to all of this? Now, as you may know, I love scrolling Reddit, and I came across this company many people kept posting about named Omaha Steaks, a company that's been around for over 100 years with the same quality meat that you can get at the highest rated restaurants around. Whether it's ribeyes for a special date night with a horror movie, hamburgers for a campfire with some scary stories, or a juicy sausage that you can cut up into tiny pieces in the kitchen, Omaha Steaks has it all. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging, and is shipped nationwide, arriving frozen and ready to grill, sear, and roast with minimal effort and time. And did you know that they have this really cool offering called the Burger Perfection Flight? For just $79.99, you can get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of steak, including filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. I can't wait to try this flight. I already have my order in, and it's going to be here in no time, and I'll let you guys know just how good it is. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com. Promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. Story number 3. My neighbor's TV keeps turning on at night, and he's been dead for over a week. Posted by Dryer1 or Old Man Whispers on Instagram. Raimundo lived in a small apartment complex, just 6 units in total. Quiet, close-knit in structure. Most tenants kept to themselves, sharing little more than passing nods and the occasional polite greeting. One of those neighbors had been Mr. Langston, who lived next door. He was an older man who lived alone, a creature of habit, quiet, predictable, the kind of person you noticed more through routine than conversation. And every night, like clockwork, Raimundo could hear his TV faintly through the thin apartment walls that they shared. Old game shows, Jerry, Jerry, Jerry. That's not the right answer. What your ass say? Old westerns, you name it. Anything that was on regular TV, this guy was watching. Late at night, at a time most people were asleep. And it was always easy to tell what he was watching. And it would play late into the night, often long after most people had gone to sleep. And Raimundo got so used to it that it almost felt like background noise. Noise that he stopped noticing after a while. And it almost felt like if he didn't hear that noise at night, something was off. And then about a week ago, Mr. Langston passed away. Natural causes, they said. There was no commotion, no scene, just a quiet absence of someone who had once been there every day. The landlord handled things quickly. They changed the locks, shut off the power, and they sealed the unit. And life in the building moved on. Well, at least it tried to. A few nights later, something creepy started occurring. At exactly 2:13 a.m., a sound broke the silence. The TV. But not any game shows he could recognize. Just static. And at first, Raimundo thought it was just his imagination. Had he been dreaming? Was it for real? Then it happened again the next night. And then the night after that. And it was always at the same time. 2:13 a.m. Like clockwork. Loud, overwhelming static. The kind that used to fill screens before signal would cut out completely. And it was a harsh, hissing noise that didn't belong in the quiet of the early morning. And it only happened at night, never during the day. And the pattern became impossible to ignore. And eventually, curiosity pushed Raimundo to act. One night, as the static roared through the walls at its usual time, he stepped into the hallway and walked to Mr. Langston's door. He hesitated for a moment, and then he knocked, and the sound stopped instantly. It didn't fade. It didn't lower. It just stopped. The silence that followed felt heavier than the noise itself. Raimundo stood there for a few seconds longer, listening, waiting for any sign of movement inside. But he would hear nothing. No footsteps, No shifting, no explanation. And he told himself that it had to be something logical. Faulty wiring, someone messing with the unit, maybe even someone breaking in and leaving without being seen. But none of it felt right. But still, he tried to prove it. And the next night, when the static started again, Raymundo recorded on his phone, and the sound came through clearly. Loud, sharp, unmistakable, enough, he thought, to show the landlord. But later, he would listen back. At first, it was exactly what he expected. Static. But something else made him pause. There was something else buried beneath it. Faint, distorted. He slowed the recording down and listened closer. That's when he heard it. A voice. Low. Warped. Almost blending into the noise. But not completely. Saying his name. Raymundo. He replayed it again and again. And each time, it was the same result. Raymundo. And after that, Raymundo didn't dare go back to the door. He didn't knock. He didn't investigate. And he stopped trying to explain it. Because whatever was inside that apartment, it didn't feel empty anymore. Story number 4. A creepy story from Pacheco Pass, posted by Stunna_831 on my Instagram page. I'm an Amazon driver. My route runs through Los Banos. I take Pacheco Pass a lot, and during the holidays, it can get pretty late out there. Sometimes I see people or figures standing on the side of the road. One night it was raining hard, and I was coming downhill when I spotted what looked like a black ball on the side of the road. And as I got closer, it rolled into the lane. But it didn't stay a ball. It started growing taller and taller. And by the time I reached it, it had to be at least 7 feet tall. I froze. I didn't swerve. I just drove straight through it. And it felt like passing through a dense, pitch black mist. It went right through my van. I was praying the entire drive home. Story number 5. A Tinder date that could have ended badly. Posted by an anonymous user on Reddit. 2 years earlier, Tara had matched with a man on Tinder. At first, everything felt easy. The conversation flowed naturally. The chemistry seemed genuine. There was an immediate sense of familiarity. They even had mutual friends, which gave Tara an added sense of security. It made him feel safe, someone vetted, someone real. So when he suggested that they meet in person and she spend the night, Tara agreed. She told herself that it would be fine. They've been talking, she knows people that know him, and she would arrive at his place at 9 p.m. But the moment the door opened, something felt off. He wasn't what she expected. Not just physically, but everything about him felt different from the version that Tara had built in her mind. His appearance was unkempt. He looked like he needed to take a damn shower. And inside the apartment, things only got worse. It was messy. Not just cluttered, but neglected. The air was thick with the smell of stale tobacco, lingering in every room. The space felt less like a home and more like somewhere temporary, as if he was some sort of squatter. But still, Tara tried to push past the discomfort. Near the entrance, she noticed a stack of books, titles about autism, and she asked him about it casually. That's when he told her. He explained that he was autistic, that he had Asperger's, and that he struggled to distinguish right from wrong. At the same time, he said that he was highly skilled at reading people, that he could analyze body language so precisely that he could tell what someone was thinking just by observing them. This unsettled Tara. She didn't fully understand what he meant as far as being able to tell right from wrong. But something about the way he said it made her uneasy. And after that, he would offer her a drink, which Tara accepted. As she followed him into the kitchen, her eyes landed on something that made her stomach tighten. A weapon. It set out in the open on the counter. She froze for a moment, instinctively reacting before she could stop herself. And he noticed it, and quickly reassured her that it wasn't loaded. He told her that it belonged to his father. And Tara didn't know whether to believe him, but by now, the unease had settled deep. And trying to stir things back to something normal, he mentions to Tara that he writes quite a bit like her, and he decides to show her a poem that he had wrote up on his computer. Tara stood behind him as he read it out loud. As the words unfolded, her chest tightened. The poem describes something so horrible that if I even read you some of the lines from it, YouTube and any other podcast platform would probably take this episode off the web fast. So all I'm going to say is that it was so disturbing, so detailed, and involves something bad with younger people, and it would freak Tara out. And the poem was specific, too specific. Tara pretended to appreciate his writing talent because he was really starting to scare her. And that's when the conversation shifted again. He began talking about his ex-girlfriend. Casually, almost proudly, he described how they used to choke each other, hold each other underwater in the shower, just to feel what it was like to have control over someone else's life. And that was the moment where things became a bit much. Too much. The red flags Tara had been ignoring all night came crashing together all at once. She needed to get the hell out of there. But there was one problem. She had already agreed to stay the night. And now, she was alone in his apartment. Any wrong move, any sign that she was afraid, might change the situation in a way that she couldn't predict. So Tara stayed calm. Quietly, without drawing attention, she texted her father. She sent him the address and asked him to come pick her up immediately. And then she turned back to him, and that's when she had to put on an act. Tara would explain to the guy that she ultimately couldn't stay, that she was really disgusted at herself for not being able to stay longer. And at that moment, they were already in his bed. Tara lay there beside him, pretending that everything was normal, while her eyes kept drifting back to her phone, waiting. Every second felt like a minute as she anxiously waited for her dad to arrive. And after so many times of checking her phone, he noticed and asked her if she was in a hurry to leave. And that's when Tara's heart jumped. She remembered what he said, that he could read people, understand what they were thinking just by watching them. For a moment, Tara thought he knew, and she was scared that he was going to take action if she didn't hide her fear. It was at that point that he offered her a massage. She tried to refuse, but carefully, gently, not wanting to trigger suspicion, she agreed. And moments later, Tara found herself in her underwear, lying there as he hovered over her, and every second stretched longer than the last. Her body was tense, her mind racing, every instinct telling her that she was in danger. And then, her phone rang. The sound cut through everything. Her father was outside, and relief hit instantly. Tara pulled away, got dressed as quickly as she could, barely managing a goodbye before leaving the apartment. And she didn't look back. Once she was safe, she sent one final message, telling him that she didn't want to see him again, that his behavior had scared her, and then she would block him. And days later, one of Tara's friends matched with the same man. He had the same approach, same invitation. Come on over, stay the night. But this time, Tara warned her friend, and thankfully, she didn't go. Looking back, Tara still doesn't know exactly what might have happened had she stayed. Maybe nothing would have happened, or maybe something far worse. But one thing is certain, she had been closer to danger than she realized in the moment, and she got out just in time. If you made it to the end, make sure you rate and review this podcast and listen to episode 23, where I tell even more scary stories. Sign up at thescarecast.com for my weekly newsletter and subscribe so you don't miss the next upload.